Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, like a lot of you out there, probably, I hope, I don't like waste. I don't like to see things wasted, whether it's, you know, money or resources or time or material or people's labor. And I think we've probably all been struck on occasion by one little specific example of waste, which is when you're in a hotel, most hotels every day will replace the little soaps that you get. And you have one little soap for the sink and one bigger soap for the shower. The thing is that on a national scale, that's a huge amount of waste that goes on because those soaps are thrown away most of the time every day, whether you've used only a little bit of it or not. And so I've actually once or twice in a hotel thought about that and run into, you know, a housekeeper outside my hotel room door and mentioned that you don't need to replace, you know, the soaps and you don't need to wash the sheets and that kind of thing. And that's actually getting more prevalent in hotels, that they will give you an option of not having your sheets and towels washed every day, which is a great thing. But my guest today did notice that very same thing. And unlike me and all the rest of us who notice little things like that and don't do anything about it, he actually did something about it. His name is Derek Kayongo. He's the founder and chairman of something called the Global Soap Project, which I think you're going to find out is a very interesting idea that's so simple, has such huge leverage, and it's, you know, something that can have a great impact worldwide. Welcome, Derek.
Thank you so much, Kurt, for having me.
Glad to have you here. So, we'll just, I guess, plunge in, Derek, and tell us briefly, what does the Global Soap Project do? What's it about?
Very simply, the Global Soap Project recycles partially used hotel soaps and makes brand new soap out of them, which we then ship back to Africa, where I'm originally from, and we give them to particularly what we call vulnerable populations, people that live on a dollar or less a day. And most people don't know, but there's about 2 billion of those worldwide who can't really afford to buy these needed necessities like soap. So refugees, orphans, prisoners in prisons where we have a ton of skin diseases looming, and populations like those. So that's what we really do.
So this is a great example of an idea that's, you know, green in many ways, right? It saves money. It saves lives, really, if it prevents disease, as it, obviously it does. And then it saves landfill space, too, because these little soaps that are barely used don't get thrown in the trash and stuck in a landfill. You know, I guess the rain and the water eventually would dissolve them, but still they're taking up space in a landfill for a while. And so this is really recycling at its best. And as I said at the outset, it's such a simple, high-leverage thing. So you mentioned, Derek, that you're from Africa. What is your background? Where are you from?
I'm originally Ugandan, and I think Uganda has gained notoriety recently because of the movie Last King of Scotland. If your listeners haven't seen it, they should go and see it to see a bigger picture of who Uganda is and what Uganda is. But this reprobate leader created an environment in which the citizens were just in dire straits. He destroyed every infrastructure we had right out of independence. If you remember well, he also was part of the capturing of the Israeli plane, which the Israeli government had to come and rescue. So he really got us into a lot of trouble internationally and locally. And because of that, my family was kicked out of the country, and we ended up becoming refugees in Kenya, where I lived for a couple of years with my family. And so that's how I got to move from what was a great country, Uganda, to becoming a refugee, something I had never expected I would ever fall into. But there I was.
Yeah, so the leader in Uganda that you're talking about is not just a movie figure, but that was actually the dictator Idi Amin, right?
And
that was
correct.
In the late 70s maybe or so. And he was a brutal guy. And as you say, he just turned the country upside down and shook it to enrich himself and his family and so on. And he was just sadistic killer, a brutal guy. And so he ran plenty of people like you and your family out. Your father was a prominent businessman. What did he do in Uganda?
He had a printing press, and he also on the side made soap, which is how I got to land into this idea. It didn't come automatically, but that's what he did. And we lost all of those businesses, and we were stuck in Nairobi, Kenya, with absolutely nothing.
Wow.
And this is an interesting thing to mention, because June 20th, which is also Father's Day, is also Refugee Day, for those of you who are in tune with your calendars. Refugee Day is a very important day for all of us. But yes, this is how we left the country, left businesses all behind, lost all of that, and we were stuck at zero.
So there you were with your family in Kenya. How many people in your family?
We are, with my siblings, we are six of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you stay in a camp, a refugee camp, or how did it work there?
You know, we were lucky. Everybody usually, when you leave the country and go to another country, most chances are you're going to be in a camp. But fortunately, because of my dad's businesses, he had friends in Kenya who took us in, and we were fortunate to live in an actual refugee camp. But just taking us in and having to start from scratch meant that we were going to deal with a lot of stresses, including a lack of money, which leads into a lack of necessities like things like soap and all these other things. And we just struggled a lot. So coming from a country where you had all those things and going to a new country, having to learn the language, the culture, all that stuff, creates an environment in which it's just really hard to survive.
It makes a strong impression. So there you were, you fell basically off a cliff from affluence into suddenly, unexpectedly, refugee status.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking with Derek Kayongo, who is no longer a refugee because he managed to get to the U.S. How did you come to the U.S., Derek, and why?
Well, I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to come to school up here in Philadelphia. And as I came up here, I landed in the U.S. for the first time, and I was very excited, as you can imagine. So I get into a hotel, court, and guess what? I check into the hotel room, and as I look around the room, I see the bathroom, and I go in there, and there were three bars of soap.
Mm.
One bar read something like hand washing soap.
That's right.
The other one read facial soap,
mm-hmm.
and the third one read body soap. For the life of me, I couldn't imagine that every part of the body had its own soap, because I had never seen this before.
What would happen if I used the body soap on my face? Would my face fall off or what?
So there I was, you know, cracking up. And I said, well, you know what? I will take the two bars, hide them away for another, because I didn't have any soap with me.
Yeah.
And then I'll use those as the days go by. Well, that evening when I came back from wherever I had gone, they had replaced all three bars of soap. I said, oh, wow, okay. So I took those. Second day, the same thing happened. And then I caught on. I thought to myself, you know what? I think they're going to charge me for these bars of soap.
Oh, no.
So I took them downstairs to the concierge, and I said, look, buddy, I need to confess. I've been taking away the soaps, but I know I can't afford them. So here they are. I will use the one I have, and please don't give me any more soap.
The guy busted
laughing just like you are.
Yeah, the soap thief.
And he said, no, brother, don't worry. You already actually paid for them by virtue of being in the hotel.
Mm.
So I said, but what do you do with the ones that are partially used? And if I checked out, what would you do with them? He said, oh, we threw all of them away. It's the etiquette here. And that began my mind thinking, you threw away all those soaps? He said, yes. I asked him, how many hotels do you have in this country?
Mm.
He said, I don't know, but there are a lot. And so that's how we started the idea, because we discovered that there's 4.6 million hotel rooms in the U.S., 4.6 million hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And it's estimated by the Hotel Association that they throw away about 800 million bars of soap every year.
800 million, yeah.
800 million bars of soap.
How old were you at this time, Derek?
At that time, I think I was 25 or 26, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did it go from there? I mean, how did it go from that idea, which, as I said at the beginning, we've all kind of, or a lot of us have had, you know, fleetingly or whatever, but you did something with it. So how did you get the project started, and when did it start?
Well, it took me a couple of years to actually get it started, because I had to think through, and because, as you can imagine, it's a daunting task to think about all these hotels all over the country. But what I had in my toolkit, if you want to call it that, was a couple of friends who worked in the hotel industry. And when I sat down with the first one, her name is Vicky Gordon, who is on my board right now, and I said to her, Vicky, I have this great idea, but I don't know where to start. As soon as I told her, she did not skip a heartbeat. She told me, we can do it. What we need to do is register an NGO, and we need to talk to the hotels and start small. So we started off in Atlanta to collect the soaps. And believe me, within 3-4 months, we had about a ton of soap. So that's how we got started. It was very easy connections.
There you go. So often in life, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and being in the right place at the right time. Because, you know, you weren't a son of a Rockefeller or something. You were a recent refugee from Africa who was here as a student, right? So most people would just be focusing on surviving in that mode.
Yeah.
But here you took this idea, and you had a couple of contacts that were key people who could help you make it real, right? So, well, where did you start? Hotels and agencies?
Yeah.
I mean, in Atlanta, is that where?
Yes, we started in Atlanta. The first hotel we went to was the Intercontinental in Buckhead. And when we, I had this bête noire that if I give the idea to them, they would say, it's impossible. Who wants to do that? We don't want to do that. But as soon as I talked to them, it came at the right time because America is starting to green its industries, you know, the hotel industry or the whoever industry, all of them are trying to be into the green movement.
Mm-hmm.
So when I brought the idea to the general manager through Vicky and myself, he was totally on board. And that very day we met with him, he started the program. He got his housekeeping director, and before you knew it, we discovered that most of the housekeepers at these hotels tend to be from other countries. So they totally bought into it.
Yeah,
they totally could identify with what I was talking about.
Right.
So that's what makes this very, very easy.
We're talking with Derek Kayango here on American Variety Radio about his project. He is the founder of something called the Global Soap Project, which collects soap from hotels and is just, it's kind of just beyond the ground floor. It's expanding rapidly. It's a great idea. It's one of those ideas that's so obvious once you think of it, but most people don't think of it, or if they do, it's just fleeting, but he took it and ran with it, and he's starting to do it, which is to collect little bars of soap from hotels, those little hospitality bars of soap that are individually wrapped that weigh half an ounce or an ounce and are used once and thrown away, and then they process them into large amounts of soap that are then distributed to the third world. So let's talk about that, Derek, for a few minutes. Let's talk about the operational and, let's call it, logistical aspects of the Global Soap Project. How do you collect the soap, and how do you transport it, and what do you do with it?
Yeah, so we have key markets in which we're playing, and the ones that are outside of those key markets tend to sort of mail the soap into us. That's how interesting this is. So we have hotels in California that are shipping us soap every day. We have a hotel in Boston, the Seaport, that ships us hotel soap every day. That they fill up the about 2,000 pounds. They just put it on a truck and ship it to us. Then the ones that are immediately close to Atlanta, you know, in Tennessee and North Carolina, South Carolina, those we can drive to and pick up over the weekend. So that's how we're doing it. It's very, very organic. The hotels are playing with us, which is great. We have a bunch of volunteers that are working with us, which is also great. Now, the way it also has started to work is that we usually find somebody in a city like Chattanooga, where we are, in Tennessee, and that person has done a fantastic job becoming the central player in Chattanooga to organize all the hotels. He picks up all the soap and stores it in the storage, and when it's about 2,000 pounds, he calls us and we go pick it up. So we are finding that people are voluntarily coming in and saying, we want to help. What can I do to help? Including, you know, college students at Georgia Tech who are helping us develop machines and all that good stuff. So from that standpoint, we are getting a lot of help. But in terms of once it gets here, we then have a machine we just recently bought. And what the machine does is very interesting. So we sort the soap up, make sure we have all the soaps clean and everything, and then we put the soap in the machine. It grinds the soap up, and it has two chambers. The machine has two chambers, a heating chamber and a cooling chamber. So as the soap goes through the heating chamber, it melts, and it's heated up and sanitized that way. And then it gets to the cooling chamber, and it cures. That's where it cures.
Okay.
And as it comes out, it forms a noodle-like formation, which we then cut into small bars, depending on how large we want the bars. And after that, we just pack the bars in boxes. We don't tend to wrap them because they're going to people. We don't want to put too much trash in there. But once the boxes are fixed, then they're ready to ship off. So it's a very simple organic process.
All right, so it sounds almost like plastics recycling. I mean, you first chip the soap, you clean it. I guess it comes in a gooey mess sitting, you know, and we've all seen that in a soap dish or whatever. So you get rid of the goo and get down to the solid material, and then you chip that into a certain size, and then you heat it, melt it, and then form it, and it comes extruding out in a round tube-like shape. Is that the noodle you described?
Yeah, we have different plates. We can make rectangular shapes. We can make oval. We can make round. We can make octagon. So we can make different kinds of shapes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And so then you cut it, I guess, into soap-sized or soap bar-sized pieces, right?
Yeah, 6 ounce, 4 ounce, 3 ounce,
oh, okay,
1 ounce.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then where does it go from there? How does it get out from – you're in Atlanta, right?
Yes, and so from there, we have three approaches to that. One, we have NGOs that already work in Africa or in Latin America that contact us and say we are doing what we call water and sanitation programs.
Let me interrupt to say an NGO, for those of you who may not know that, is a non-governmental organization, right? So
correct.
Kind of a non-profit, but at a government level. And UN organizations, that kind of thing, are NGOs.
Yeah, yeah. So they apply and we vet them. And then once they've passed our vetting process, we then send them the soap. For example, we just sent about 9,000 bars of soap to Swaziland to an organization called Heart for Africa, and they work specifically with orphans. And so that was picked up here in Atlanta. They put it on their own container and shipped it on their own price.
Oh, really? Okay.
So we have, yeah, so we have that part of the logistics that is very beautiful. The second piece is we are also involved in taking our own soap down to Africa. We are going this July to Nairobi, Kenya, where we'll be working with an NGO down there. We will be giving soap to, again, orphans, refugees, and other vulnerable populations. So we're taking about 20,000 bars of soap with us. So there's that approach as well. And then the last approach is very simple. We usually will work with nine government organizations, again, who will actually call us from there, and they'll say, please send us the soap. So we'll send it directly to them versus the ones that pick it up from our warehouse here. So those are the three approaches we have.
Okay. So far, is all of the soap going to Africa in one way or another, or has it gone to different continents too?
Yes, we've also had some that went to Haiti during the terrible earthquake. Mm. Yeah. But most of it is, at this point, is going to Africa, sub-Saharan Africa.
So you mentioned that an organization, Heart for Africa, has picked up some soap and taken it to where they operate, and they've done that at their own expense, but you're probably not that lucky all the time, are you? Are there costs that you have to bear sometimes for shipping the soap?
Yes, and this is where the rubber meets the road. I think that people need to understand the dire needs out there. There's about 2 million kids that die every year of lower respiratory disease and diarrhea. Hmm. And part of that is because they don't have soap. The first line of defense against disease and germs is soap. When you cough and you have a flu, people say, wash your hands. If these kids go to the pit latrine and the toilets there don't flush, they don't have toilet paper and soap. That is a clear ingredient for them to get diarrhea and other diseases.
Sure.
So we need help to sort of get this done, and part of that is through the financial support that we would have to get to take as many bars of soap as possible.
So I think you need donations from our listeners, and we're going to give your website in a little while here, but from all kinds of people across the country and the world. But how is the project funded? It must be funded on a larger scale too, if it's going to expand. I mean, can you get funding from UN agencies and from corporations and so on?
Yeah, we are getting a lot of, for example, we have a standing offer from a church in Louisiana that works with prison populations in Ghana. Mm-hmm. And what they're trying to do is to try and give us a certain amount of money to make a large amount of bars of soap as a donation. So they would donate to our organization if we can give them soap. Hmm. So that's how it's going to work. There are a lot of church groups that go out to do missionary work. There's a lot of organizations that go out to do, sanitation work. And what we are telling them is that if they can give us a small donation, we can then actually give them the soap at a cost that you can never get in supermarkets. So those donations are what will keep this moving. And if they want to pick it up at their own volition and take it on their own volition, that would also be fine.
Yeah, I was just hearing recently that Procter & Gamble, who makes Dawn dish detergent, is donating tons of Dawn dish soap to the Gulf Coast where they're cleaning birds, right?
Yeah.
So I would imagine that companies like Procter & Gamble and other soap manufacturers and household product manufacturers would get some great PR and marketing value out of donating money to you in addition to soap and equipment maybe and so on. Well, let me ask you, how many staff are involved in the Global Soap Project right now?
We have about, including the board, we have about 20 people.
Yeah, yeah.
So about 50% of those are volunteers, so they don't get paid at all.
But you have 10 people or so who are on paid staff, and then you've got your operating costs. Obviously, you've got a facility, a processing plant, you've got equipment that you run, and it takes power to run it and everything else. So I read that you have just finally achieved, very recently, 501c3 tax-deductible status. So So people who donate to you can write that off as a tax deduction.
Exactly. And I want them to realize that this is an interesting thing that we're doing. It's not done before. Hmm. And it's one of those things that as a new American, because, Kurt, you may not know this, but I became an American after going through all that trouble back at home 5 years ago.
Oh, congratulations.
And one of the hallmarks of being an American is the ability to really become an entrepreneur, and in this case, a social entrepreneur that solves problems. And I think that that's what has made this country a great country. And the best line that I have for myself is what John F. Kennedy said, don't ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So as we do this work, we are helping take a resource that is valuable to Africa and other parts of the world out of the landfills. This 800 million bars of soap would be sitting in a landfill, polluting our own landfills. So rather than do that, we can all work together to take it out of the landfills and save ourselves the burden of having to have that go down deep into our water tables to pollute our water. So we are helping solve that aspect of the problem, but at the same time also helping people back at home in Africa who don't have soap to fight diseases. So it's a reciprocation, it's a symbiotic relationship between America and the rest of the world, and it's a beautiful thing.
Well, you're right, it is a beautiful thing, Derek, and you're an example of, you know, what we've seen in this country for generations of immigrants who get here and, like you say, are able to sort of hit the ground running and very quickly become an entrepreneur and use their smarts and their energy to not only make something for themselves and their family, but in your case, to make something that's, small and growing that helps a whole segment of the world, really. As you were saying, it's something that has numerous benefits. It's, it's a cliche to say it's win-win, but it's like win-win-win-win, basically.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something that's called the gleaners, where in some parts of the country, people will go around and collect food that's just past its pull date in a grocery store, but it's still good, right? And they'll take it and distribute it to food banks and to places where people are needy and don't have the money to buy food. And here's this food that's going to be thrown out. I mean, it's such a glorified waste on the one hand and such a huge need on the other, even in our own country. So you've identified something that you can do on a global scale.
Yeah.
And let's talk for a minute about the scope of it. How much soap have you collected so far? I think you only started really several months ago, right?
So. Yeah, we started last year in April. We've so far collected about 20 tons of soap right now.
Okay.
So soap is not going to be a problem. I can tell you, we have a couple of hotels in Las Vegas that are going to keep us busy that have just come online. So the issue of when, the first day I picked up the first bin of soap, it had 500 pounds of soap. But you should see it. The visual is unbelievable. To see all these bars of soap that were going to be thrown away, collected. So in terms of scale and how big this is, we are talking a lot of waste and a lot of soap. But the beauty about it is that as you start to trap it and catch it and recycle it, and as you start to give it to populations that need it, then you feel the hotels are feeling good about this.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good about this. The refugees are feeling very good about this. So you can see that everybody who's been helping us has been really doing a good job. I'll give you a quick example. I got a letter from a lady who had gone through the Great Depression with her parents as a young kid, and she had saved up some soap, which I still have, because I just don't want to recycle it. It has such a great meaning for me, that they were saving during the Great Depression. They were going through a rough time. They couldn't afford soap. So she sent me that soap with the letter to tell me, Derek, this is exactly what our country needs, is people who are understanding of the limited resources we have globally and using them wisely. That's the American spirit, and that's what I love about this country.
Yeah, so it's not just the practical benefits of hygiene and disease prevention and on our end preventing extra landfill waste, but it's the goodwill that comes on both sides. Everybody involved feels good about doing something that's so easy, really, and so cheap.
Yeah.
But can you talked about the huge amount of soap that you see, I guess, in your warehouse it's collecting every day.
Yeah.
And the soap is probably coming in faster than you can handle it. So far, can you keep up with the supply, or are you going to have to ramp up on the processing end pretty quickly?
Well, the good thing is that you have to take these things step by step. So what we have coming in right now is exactly the amount we need. But as we get more professional and as we do this stuff really well, we're going to need more hotels to come online, because you don't want to give one bar of soap to somebody and then come back after 2 years to give another bar.
Yeah, sure.
You want to have a stable stream of soap coming
steady
in.
Steady supply. Yeah,
steady supply. And we're talking just a segment of the population in these poor countries. The other people who are wealthy, who have the money, can afford soap, and they do get soap. We're just talking about these vulnerable populations that tend to fall sick, and when they fall sick, they become a dependent group on the economies of these countries, and therefore they become a burden. That's why Africa sometimes is always poor. You know, people wonder, why is this continent always poor? It's because people are always sick. They have no medication. They have no defenses at all. And so this is one little attempt. My little attempt to really solve that problem of disease. And if we all work together, it solves the disease, as you've mentioned, Kurt. It solves the issue of landfills being filled up here with soap and pollutants. It solves the hotel's problem of not being green, becoming green. And it makes those people who donate to us and help us out to feel like they are partnering with us. Because you know what? Every American travels and they travel in a hotel and they leave behind that bar of soap. So we are all in this together. All of us travel and we leave a bar of soap behind. Every time you leave that bar behind, remember a refugee could use it, an orphan could use it, and make sure the hotel knows about it.
We're talking with the impassioned Derek Kayongo, who's the founder and chairman of the Global Soap Project, which collects soap from hotels, recycles it into clean new soap, and sends it to the third world, so far into Africa, which is a huge continent, obviously. You know, I first read about this, Derek, in a recent project in Brevard County, Florida, called Go Go Green, in which a hotel here was collecting soap and sending it to you and so on. But this has such a tremendous potential for expansion at the grassroots. So how can you expand it across the U.S.? Do you need additional processing facilities in other parts of the country? You mentioned that some place in California sends it to you at their own expense, but you can't always rely on that happening on a broad scale. So can you expand it widely?
Yes, we can. We are very fortunate. The student at Georgia Tech are in the process of developing a machine for us. So we will ramp up by setting up other satellite places, you know, in key markets. So, for example, California is a key market. Las Vegas is going to be definitely a key market. So by putting one in Las Vegas and having the California Las Vegas market taken care of, you can see that can actually work. Atlantic City in New Jersey, New York area, D.C. area, the Atlanta area, and then Chicago. So those are the areas where we see the potential for growth in this process. And I think that if we can do that through the support of everybody, we can then see an incredible, incredible job done here. Because remember, every year, October 15th is Global Hand Washing Day. It was mandated by the UN. So what is the purpose of this? It's a way to teach people how to use soap. But every time we have that day and we tell the Africans that it's Global Hand Washing Day, they laugh at us and they say, okay, how am I going to wash my hands and with what? I don't have soap. So this is a mockery of the date because they don't have the soap. So if we can do these things and ramp up in the future, we will see this day as an accomplishment.
Well, Derek, as always happens, we run out of time so fast. I'd like to talk with you some more about it. But what an inspiring project. And I hope that as the thing expands, which I think inevitably it will, you can expand to other regions, the Middle East, for example, India, you know, Asia, parts of Latin America, and parts of Eastern Europe, for example. But I want to get to how people can help you. They can go to your website at www.globalsoap.org, right?
Correct. It's
spelled just like it sounds, globalsoap.org. And go from there. People can donate to you, and you can use all the donations you can get. It's a fantastic idea, and I wish you so much luck with it. And thanks for being on with us, and thanks for starting the Global Soap Project.
Oh, Kurt, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, every American out there, keep the spirit, remain innovative, hopeful, and God bless you.
Thanks to you all for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.